This is the Horse Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Equidirectory, an online horse business directory and marketplace where more than 5,000 other equestrians have listed their business. Equidirectory is owned and operated by fellow Leadline community member Yvette Montgomery, who wants you to know that basic business listings are totally free on her platform. Sign up and list your business today by downloading the Equidirectory app or visiting equidirectory.net.
Welcome to the Leadline Podcast, the show where we believe that running your own horse business should feel less like a chore and more like the life you've always dreamed of. Join us as we share valuable advice on how to become more focused, more organized, and more profitable in your horse business. And now, here's your host, Mandy Flanders.
Hey everyone, it's Mandy, and welcome to episode 18 of the Leadline Podcast. A lot of you are probably familiar with the popular four-day equestrian event called Equina Fair, which occurs both in Springfield, Massachusetts, and Columbus, Ohio, two times a year. They have everything from a massive shopping experience, demonstrations, guest speakers, breed highlights, and of course, the Fantasia show. My very first Equina Fair was in Columbus, Ohio, back in 2010, where I attended as a blogger to interview several well-known horsemen and women. It was an amazing experience that I'll never forget, and I've returned as an attendee many times over the years ever since. In today's episode, I'm joined by Equina Fair president and owner, Kogi Long, who shares an insider look at what goes into planning such a large-scale production. Coming from the events industry myself, I know that event planning is no small task, and it can take months and even years to produce an event of this scale. Kogi will discuss a variety of topics during our conversation, starting from how she became the owner of Equina Fair to what it was like going virtual in 2020, and even how horse business owners can benefit from having a booth at their show. We also chat briefly about the Leadline's first ever in-person networking event that will be happening at Springfield, Massachusetts this upcoming November. So if you want more details about that, be sure to check out our show notes. Now let's go ahead and get to the episode today. Here's Kogi Long. Hey Kogi, and welcome to the show today. I'm excited to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to join you and should be fun.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a great time today. So I want to jump right into talking all about Equina Fair. My very first Equina Fair that I ever attended was in 2010, and I actually had to go back before we started this interview today to see when it was because I knew it was so long ago. But I'm really interested in chatting with you today because I'm so excited to learn what goes into producing such a great event. I know you've been with Equina Fair for a really long time, too. So why don't you take me back to the beginning when you first got started?
Okay, sure. Well, I started with Equina Fair as a fresh college graduate. I attended the University of Findlay and saw a job posting on their job board looking for a marketing associate and applied for the job and was selected and kind of started my event production marketing career with Equina Fair fresh out of college. And from there, kind of learned the ins and outs of putting the event together and marketing the event, and dabbled in a variety of different departments within the company. I helped coordinate the educational program for a number of years, and then also became involved in more of the management side of things as vice president. And a few years back, actually took over the company by purchasing it and becoming president. So it's kind of been a long progression, I guess you might say, and working my way from the very bottom all the way up to the top, but really kind of humbling at the same time, knowing what it takes to do all of the different types of jobs that are involved in producing Equina Fair, from securing our marketing and advertising campaigns to coordinating our educational programs and our Fantasia performers and our evening show to making sure our trade show comes together, securing sponsors, all of that kind of stuff. So there are a lot of moving parts, but it's really invigorating to see everything come together at our events. And it's rewarding in that respect, just to see everybody really enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Absolutely. And it's such a great event. I've been going for years, like I said, since 2010. And I haven't gone every single year, but I've been to many, many of these events. And they're just one of my favorites. I personally go to Massachusetts quite a bit because it's a little bit closer for me, but I've been to both locations. So I'm really interested in hearing your story of how you ended up taking over the company, because I think a lot of people know what Equine Affair is, but they don't necessarily know the team that's making it happen behind the scenes. So I'd love to hear a bit more about how you went from that transition of being an employee of the company to later purchasing it.
Well, Equine Affair was founded by a lady named Eugenia Snyder, and she essentially developed Equine Affair from the very beginning, the basic idea of creating a horse expo and putting it together and actually making it happen. She nurtured it really from the very beginning stages all the way up to what it is now. And a few years back, I was in a position at that point, really, I had worked side by side with her for many years at that point and knew all of the ins and outs of the company. And so it really was kind of more of a logical transition in that she was ready to step back and I was willing to take the reins and really kind of guide it forward.
It sounds like you've worked so many different roles and taken on many different responsibilities through Equine Affair, which I think is really great. I think that really probably benefits your team because you understand all of the moving parts and pieces that go into planning and producing such a big event. So with live events, obviously, there's so many different things that go into that process. What are some of the challenges that you've personally encountered from any of those different roles that you've worked over the years?
Well, each event always presents its unique set of challenges, and some you may be able to anticipate and some you don't necessarily anticipate. I think part of being a great event producer is being able to juggle the variety of different things that do come your way. You might have an attendee who needs attention with resolving a ticket order, or you might have an exhibitor who's booth isn't sized the correct sizing that they ordered or something like that. So it's beneficial to be able to cater to a variety of different people, different personalities, and being able to find a resolution for each of those situations, whether it's big or small or otherwise.
We haven't really had too many conversations prior to this interview today, other than through our email. So one thing you might not know, too, even about me, is that I have a long history in working as an events professional. And with that, I know that last year, all of us who were in any kind of field in the events industry took a really hard hit when live events shut down. My husband and I have been doing this kind of work for years, so we lost contracts, you know, for pretty much the entire year. And I know that Equine Affair ended up needing to pivot and go virtual in 2020, and I was super bummed because I was planning to come. But what was that like for you, having to take what you guys have done as an in-person event for so many years and trying to do that virtually?
Well, that certainly was a challenge in a lot of ways. I think In some respects, we had a need or a desire to still be able to connect our exhibitors with our attendees. We're very service oriented and dedicated to bringing the industry together. So it was logical for us to transition to an online presence. It's something where you can't replicate an in-person experience online. It's just simply not possible. But we put our best foot forward to create an online event that served a variety of needs in terms of giving the attendees educational opportunities, opportunities to shop with the exhibitors, and really just kind of expand our horizons a little bit in terms of what we can do digitally. But it was something where the cancellation of our Ohio event in 2020 came just weeks before we were supposed to put it on. So it really kind of turned our world upside down for a while there, just in terms of trying to figure out exactly what direction we could go, what direction should we go, and kind of taking things day by day, since, as we all know, the pandemic kind of evolved over a period of time and nobody really knew exactly what was going to happen. So I think at this point we're at a different stage where we are able to return to in-person events, and I can't tell you how excited our team is here to be able to return to the Massachusetts event next month, and then also return to Ohio next spring. I think we've all been working very hard over the past year or so, even though we've had to make a variety of different modifications in order to be able to continue producing our events.
Yeah. So the first in-person event that you have done since COVID, or that you'll be doing, is coming up in Springfield next month. So that's pretty soon. What's it been like trying to come back from that break period? Did you have any kind of transitions with your team, the virtual events that you guys had to put on? Have you had to revisit some of those vendors that were booked before? What's that process looked like for you?
I think our team has been amazingly dedicated to really making things happen. And I can't thank them enough for all that they've done to really hold the ship together and keep it sailing forward. There are a lot of challenges in terms of putting an event of the scope and nature of Equine Affair together. But I think we've done a great job in navigating those waters in terms of making it as safe as possible and from the health and safety standpoint. And also bringing back the experience that attendees are accustomed to and exhibitors are accustomed to in terms of a variety of exhibitors available on the trade show floor, a phenomenal educational program, that kind of a thing. I think all of us are really still kind of emerging from the pandemic, and things may look a little bit different than they normally would, but I think it's a good starting point for coming back from a challenging time for everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure it must be so exciting for you guys to finally be back in business, right?
Yes, for sure, for sure.
That's awesome. So digging into this just a little bit further, looking at the behind the scenes, if someone were to take a true behind the scenes tour look at what you guys do on a day-to-day basis, what are some things they might be most interested in hearing about your team and what you all do over there?
Well, one of the things is probably the number of core staff that we have on board is a very small number. There are only 6 full-time staff members that really produce the event in full-fledged motion. So it's a very strong, dedicated team that really steps up to the plate, takes pride in their work, and is committed to making everything happen. So from that aspect, I think it's impressive to know that it's a very small number of people that make a lot of big things happen. On a day-to-day basis, basically, we do a lot of multitasking. We're not only preparing for our Massachusetts event that will be next month, but we're also looking ahead to 2022 and 2023. So we plan ahead quite far in advance in terms of trying to make sure we know what our new ideas are going to be, what we want to implement, or what we might want to modify from a previous event. And then also our day-to-day interactions with both the attendees, where we're processing ticket orders, we're processing exhibitor trade show booth reservations, and trying to secure additional sponsors and make sure everybody has the marketing exposure that they are entitled to and that we would like to provide to them as well.
Definitely. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and look further into some of the benefits to horse businesses. Obviously, many of our listeners are entrepreneurs, so I'd love to unpack what that looks like for a horse business owner who's wondering if it's worth the time and investment of taking a trip to Equine Affair and having a booth there. Can you speak to some of the benefits to your vendors that have an active presence at your event and what that might look like?
Really, one of the key benefits is that we cater to the entire horse industry. So we're bringing, if you are an equine-related business, we bring the equine community to you. It's your niche market, so you have that captive audience that's already interested in your industry. So it's a matter of just having so many opportunities to connect. The other aspect of it would be being able to connect with other businesses at the event. Not only are a lot of our exhibitors there to cater to the attendees, but it's also a great opportunity for them to get to know other exhibitors and network for future business opportunities in that respect as well.
From your perspective, do you have any specific tips when it comes to setting up a booth at your event? Are there any types of booths that have really stood out to you, or any types of engaging activities as a vendor that you think really work for drawing people in?
I would say that as far as setup goes, having a visually appealing storefront or booth front is something that's going to catch somebody's eye and make them pause a little bit and kind of take it in. And when they have that type of an impact, they're more likely to be a little more engaged or interested in what's inside that booth, whether it's a person or a product or a service of any nature that way. I think it's the attendees are always certainly excited if there is some benefit for them. So if there's a way for you to offer them a little bit of a discount or a coupon or an opportunity to enter a raffle or something like that, they tend to be a little bit more engaged, but they're also sometimes just looking for specific products and different things of that nature too. So trying to have a presence there, I would say the staff within the booth, if they can look like they're enjoying themselves, not necessarily back in the corner on their phone, more at the front of the booth, ready to engage with clients and customers, that's always a plus too.
I love that you brought that up because that's such a huge pet peeve of mine and something you see so often where people will pay for a booth and vendors will come in and then they will just park behind the table on their phone the whole time. They won't make eye contact. They won't engage with people. And you can tell they just don't really want to be there. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't.
Right. Exactly. No, it's something where if you want to experience great results, you also need to be willing to engage with the clients as well.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say, this is kind of fun, but what would you say to people who think they need to have a bowl of candy on their table every time they go to their show? Are you pro candy or are you not pro candy?
I think it depends. It depends on what your goal is. Sometimes candy can help pacify, but at the same time, it really kind of depends on what you have to offer with your booth. I won't say that it's necessary all the time. I think there are plenty of exhibits that have a lot to offer, and the candy really wouldn't necessarily be an additional perk per se. I think the other products may be stronger, or the service or the representation.
Yeah, exactly. I know if I were sitting behind the table in a booth, I could not do the bowl of candy because I would just be sitting there eating it myself. So I would not be able to have it because I would eat all of my favorites out of the bowl first and then there wouldn't be anything left. So it would be a problem.
Right.
So are you guys, I know you're always looking for volunteers to assist at your events. Can you share a little bit about your volunteer program and how volunteers help you with running a successful event and what kind of involvement they have?
Absolutely. Well, we talked about having a small core team in our corporate office, but on site, we do rely on about 150 volunteers for each event to actually make it all happen. So volunteers are integral to our event production. And we've, over the years, had a great enthusiastic group of volunteers from year to year, kind of shuffling in new people, but we always have room for more new people. And they help with both the setup of the event as we're getting things ready for the attendees on Thursday, and then also during the event in terms of helping to distribute programs or helping to maintain some of our distribution tables where magazines and publications are available, helping with our Fantasia show in the evening, kind of ushering people to their seats. We have really a wide variety of different positions that if someone's interested in helping out and want to do it with a friend, that's even better. But we usually have something that they could help us work on for sure.
150 is a lot of people. So do you guys have dedicated staff that manage all of these volunteers that come in to help?
We do, yes. Yes, we have a volunteer coordinator and actually a full volunteer office on site at the event, which basically coordinates the check-in of volunteers, making sure they know their instructions, what their responsibilities are, and then checking them out and making sure that they've received their souvenir or their admission for the next day if they've worked enough hours to earn some of the other perks that are associated with the volunteer program. So yes, it takes a couple of people to coordinate it all, but it's well worth it and kind of just neat to see the team spirit of everybody working together and making it all happen.
Oh, 100%. Well, like I said, that's a lot of volunteers and it does sound like they get some perks. So tell me a little bit more about the perks that folks get for volunteering at Equine Affair.
So each volunteer shift is about 2 hours in length. And if you work 2 hours, then you would receive admission for the next day. You need to work two shifts. And depending on how much time you're able to commit to volunteering, the number of days of admission increases. And then we also have other souvenirs, such as a volunteer t-shirt and some of our merchandise that we also give away to volunteers too as a thank you for their service and their time.
From a business perspective too, I feel like this is so smart. Because if you were paying 150 people individually to come in and help with the event, that would get so expensive. It's always expensive to staff events, especially when you're talking, you know, labor on top of actual staff for the show. So I feel like this is a really good way for your team to, you know, give back to the horse community by giving them the perks, but also get the extra assistance that you need.
Yes, absolutely. It's something where the volunteer program really helps allow us to help keep our admission and other costs as economical as possible. So by having the volunteers commit some of their time and donate their services in exchange for admission or something like that, that allows us to keep the admission at the gates as low as possible too, so that everybody who would like to attend can have that opportunity.
So speaking to the event as a whole, I know there's so much to do at Equina Fair. You have the trade show, you have the demos, you have Fantasia. What is the biggest draw for the event that really attracts people to attend?
I think the event as a whole draws the people. The fact that we have so many different opportunities, from shopping to education to entertainment to competition, to just seeing horses in person for those that may not have access to them on a daily basis. So I really think it's the fact that we have so many different things offered that can bring people in and want to see it all.
Definitely. And I think there's something for everybody. So I want to plug too during this episode, one of the reasons that I've had some involvement with Equina Fair as of lately is that I'm going to be hosting our first in-person networking event for the Lead Line during the November Equina Fair, which I'm super, super excited about. So not only is there going to be all of the great things that you've just talked about, but I'm also super excited to be meeting some of our podcast listeners in person.
Absolutely. And that's one of the neat things too. We certainly take pride in working with different organizations and groups and providing those types of opportunities to get together or hold a meeting at Equina Fair so that it's an easy access point for everybody to convene, but also there are other opportunities to experience what Equina Fair has to offer as well.
Definitely. Where should people go if they're looking at purchasing general admission tickets to Equina Fair, or maybe they're a business owner looking to book a booth at one of your events? What's the best way for them to go about getting in touch?
Our website is equineaffair.com, all one word, and make sure there's an E on affair. And that will have basically all of the information that you would need in terms of attending the event and then also participating in the event, whether you would want to become an exhibitor or bring your horse for a horse and farm exhibit or become a presenter within the educational program. It's all there. If for some reason you have trouble finding it, feel free to reach out to us. You can give us a call at our corporate office at 740-845-0085, and we'll be happy to point you in the right direction as well.
Awesome. Well, just a quick question on the booths. Is there any kind of waiting list for people to get in as a vendor with Equina Fair?
It depends on the event. At this point for a Massachusetts event, we still have a little bit of space left, which is not typical, but I believe as a result of the COVID pandemic, there have been challenges for a lot of different businesses, smaller and large. And so we do still have a little bit of space that we could accommodate. But if you're interested, I would certainly recommend that anyone wanting to participate, get in touch with us as soon as possible so that we can ensure you are included in our event program and different things like that and have the space secured.
Well, that's great information. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, Kogi, for being here. I've really enjoyed hearing about the history of Equina Fair, what your journey has looked like, and some of the behind the scenes stuff. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
You're welcome. Well, thanks for having me. And we'll look forward to seeing you next month with your meeting and everybody else at Equina Fair.
Awesome. Me too. Thank you so much. If you've been enjoying these episodes of the Lead Line podcast, can I ask you to do two quick things for me? subscribe to the show so you always know when we have a new episode released. And be sure to leave us a review so other people know that this is the go-to podcast for equine entrepreneurs. Reviews help us continue to climb in the rankings and reach more people, and it would really help me out. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember, let's make more money, have more time, and have fun with our horses. I'm Mandy, and I'll see you next time.